Hello, ladies. Are you struggling with hair loss? I want you to know you're not alone. Hi, I'm Bambi Staveley, former registered nurse, author, founder of Boost and Blend, and someone who probably just like you has had first-hand experience with hair loss, which is all covered in my latest book, Hair Loss in Women. When I noticed my own hair thinning 15 years ago, I went looking for information and I went looking for products for women, just like you and me. But all I could find out there was products made for men. And most of the information I could find was about male pattern baldness. Well, that's not much help. So I set out to change that. I want to see women with hair loss talking about it and talking to each other, sharing their stories from a place of knowledge. So join me as I meet some courageous women. I'll share some information and we'll learn together on the Hair Loss in Women podcast. Hi, ladies, and welcome back to the Hair Loss in Women podcast. You know, it's so powerful to hear stories of other women talking about their hair loss. And I think the stories that we tell and that we listen to in this podcast can only do good for somebody else, and that's what I'm hoping. Today we're going to be talking to Dee and hear her story. And it's really interesting that Dee has been able to find an underlying cause to her hair loss. So that'll be really good to listen to. I'll also be talking about hair washing a little bit later. You know, we all have to wash our hair, so I've got some tips to share with you on the ways we could wash our hair a little better. But for now, I really hope you enjoy this conversation that I had with Dee. Hi, Dee, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Bambi. Nice to meet you.
Let's start at the beginning. When did you first notice your hair loss?
It was about 14 years ago. I just noticed that my hair was coming out in handfuls. I'd brush my hair in the morning, like my bed used to be opposite the dressing table. And as I'd brush it, I would be able to see it sort of in the mirror coming out in the brush and in my hand. Yeah, it was horrible.
Oh, it sure is. I certainly empathise with that and had a very similar experience. So how long was the distance between when you first noticed it and when you found your reason?
Probably about 4 years. Mm. And I initially, like, I really panicked. I became worried and then depressed, actually. And I went, like, I'd been seeing a naturopath and she'd said it was mainly menopause. So I was like, oh, okay. But it just kept falling out. And I was losing most of my hair from sort of around my temples and at the front. So I found it sort of really difficult to sort of hide, if you know what I mean, that I was losing the hair. And I just started a new job at a large prestigious company here in Perth. The culture there was quite ageist, which was sad. And it was quite critical as well. So I was just really self-conscious because I had to do a lot of presentations and under lights. And I don't know, you know, as you lose your hair, when you're under the lights, you just see like the bald patches, and it was just awful. And there were a lot of tears.
Yes, I think light is one of those things that only somebody with hair loss would understand. You're standing in full sun, sitting in a restaurant under a very heavy light that seems to be shining down on the top of your head. So, yes, I think we all, particularly that thing about the light, you know, we all understand that. So were people commenting to you about your hair?
A little bit, not like every single person. And it was mainly sort of if I mentioned to friends that they'd say, oh, you know, you'll be okay. And then people would say, oh, well, just get your hair cut, you know, get it cut short. And then I was like, well, no, because then I would just have thin, short hair with bald patches instead of long, longish hair. Do you know what I mean? Mm. There didn't really seem a way around it. I had a good hairdresser, bless her, she helped. But I ended up going to a professional trichologist in Perth, and she was great and helped me as much as she could. And I ended up having scalp micropigmentation.
Right.
Which you're probably aware yes. of those that aren't. It's basically tattooing, but the needles don't go in as far as normal tattooing on your skin because obviously it's on your head. So it only lasts a couple of years, and that really helped in the beginning. It sort of masked it. I mean, it was a pretty painful procedure, to be honest, and expensive, but it helped, like, for a couple of years. It got me through. She also sold me these hair fibers, which, you know, I'd never seen anything like it before, and I was like, oh great. But they were really like thick and coarse,
right.
And she said it was horse hair. And wow. And I was like, oh okay. Anyway, so they worked, like, they gave great coverage, but they also made me really itch
right.
and scratch.
Yeah.
So finding your hair fibers was just such a blessing, like, because they're made of cotton and they don't irritate and they don't itch and they're so light, and they don't flake off either, which is what these other ones would do. You know, I'd sort of put my head down at work and they'd sort of, a few would like flake off onto the desk, and I would think, oh gosh.
Oh my goodness. So do you feel that at that time, so you had the micropigmentation, you had some hair fibers, was that affecting your day-to-day work environment for you? Was that changing the way you felt at work?
I mean, it helped with my confidence that I felt it looked okay, but I was always conscious of more hair loss, because the thing is, whilst I'd had the micropigmentation at the front, because that's where it initially started losing it, I started losing it at the back of my crown as well.
Right.
So then I used to wear ponytails to cover that bit up, but then, you know, and try and cover it up a little bit in the front. It's scary, isn't it? Because you don't know, because obviously you can't foresee, you don't know how far it's going to go, if it's ever going to stop. You know, you're just going to end up with one strand and have a comb over or something, like the old men used to do back in the 50s. It knocked my confidence generally, I must admit. And going through menopause as well, which can often take a knock on your confidence. It was, it was a really horrible time, actually.
I think it actually makes a difference when you can step out and feel like, okay, well, maybe nobody will notice, you know, nobody can see it. Then in that, there's that niggling feeling that you have, how long is this going to last for? It's a bit scary. Where's it going to end up? As you say, am I going to end up with one strand of hair, or is it going to stop? Or, you know, interesting that you saw a trichologist and she didn't offer you, I'm assuming she didn't offer you any treatment that might have stopped it or reversed it or at that time. So we'll get on to what you did next, but she didn't offer you anything?
No, obviously there was hair transplants. I didn't want to go to that point, and they'd only really performed the procedure on men till then.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like back 14, 15 years, and it's funny how the world's changed since then, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But no, not really. She did look at my diet, and we sort of went through that, and she sort of advised me to eat a lot of pepinas, like the dried pumpkin seeds. She said they're good for your hair. And I, not that I didn't wash my hair, but I tried not to wash it as frequently. And then it's the usual, you know, don't blow dry it too much.
Yeah. So how did you come to find a reason for your hair loss?
I'd been having B12 injections for about 25 years because I'd been diagnosed with pernicious anemia.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically my body couldn't store B12 at all, so I had to have regular injections to supplement them. And the B12 basically gives you energy and also mind clarity. So when I could feel my B12 depleting, I would become really, really tired, and also like trying to process stuff at work become really difficult. Like, it wasn't impossible, but rather than being able to think of something straight away, it just took me a little bit to get there. So anyway, I'd been having these B12 injections, and I started to need them more and more frequently. And it got to a point, I went back to my doctor's to have another B12 injection, and I sat down and the nurse was like, oh, you know, what are you here for? And I said, oh, another B12 injection. She said, but you only had one last week. Mm-hmm. And I said, I know, but I feel terrible. And I said, you know, I'm just so, so exhausted, and I just can't think properly. And she said, well, I can't give you another one. And I said, well, why not? And she's like, well, like legally, I'm only can really give them to you like once every 2 months, 3 months. And I burst into tears.
Oh, my gosh.
She must have thought, God, what have I got here? Anyway, she got me in to see my regular doctor. And this doctor just said, B12 isn't a disease on its own. It's actually an underlying symptom of something else. And she said, we'll do your bloods. And she'd done my bloods before, but like for the general stuff, you know, say like iron, yes, the B12, thyroid, all that sort of stuff. And they'd come up fine. And she sat there and she said, have you ever been tested for celiac? And I said, no, don't think so. And she said, okay, we'll test for that. And I might sound quite ignorant now, but back then I didn't really know to a point what celiac was. I'd heard of it, but there wasn't much awareness of gluten and everything like there is now. And so I was like, okay. So anyway, I had this blood test and it came back and she said, yes, it does show signs of celiac. You're not showing the gene, but I would like you to have an endoscopy. So I underwent that procedure, and I don't know how much you know, but we've obviously got the large intestine and the small intestine. And on the small intestine are these like, they look like reeds or rushes, and they're called villi. And it's these villi, there's like thousands of them, and they absorb all the nutrients from the food before like it like goes right through your stomach and everything. And I didn't have any at all.
Yeah.
And right. The surgeon said, normally, you know, like in a healthy person, you know, there would be millions of them and they're like loads of hairs and that all, you know, all around. People that are starting to show signs of celiac, sort of like you can see them in sort of bald patches, if you like. And I thought, oh, it's like my hair. And he said, my sort of like surface was just completely bald and like shiny. He said there was nothing. Wow. And so I must have had this for a long time and I didn't know. And looking back, I think would have had it about 10 years because I had like stomach issues and that. And I'd stopped eating bread and I just thought, you know, it was just because it just affected my tummy and that was it. And also it made sense with other things as well because I think in the end my hair was like the final thing where my body just decided it didn't need, you know, the hair and then he lost that.
How was it when you found out that you actually had something that, you know, like celiac, which you'd never ever associated with yourself before and I assume no one else in your family and you didn't have the gene for it. So how was it when you found that out?
It was mixed really, like a relief initially thinking, oh, you know, there is something to blame or the reason for it. Also, it was really overwhelming because I sort of thought, oh, you know, and, you know, I realise it's not really serious like what a lot of people have, but I was still like, oh, you know, it is life-changing to a point in what I eat or can't eat now. But it also explained because I'd had a, you know, drastic weight loss, which initially was great because, you know, I was ever really overweight, but I thought, well, I wanted to be thinner and all that, and that was good. But it was the exhaustion. And I remember some mornings waking up feeling more tired than before I went to bed. And I'm not a drama or dramatic person, drama queen or anything, but I started to wonder if I had cancer or something really serious. And I hadn't said anything to anyone because I couldn't explain the sheer exhaustion. So learning that I became celiac and that there was then a reason and also a way forward where I could potentially get healthier and restore my hair, my skin would not be so dry, you know, everything. It was just great.
And so once you found out you were celiac, you changed your diet. Anything else that you had to change?
Mainly the diet. I went to a nutritionist that sort of like specialised in celiac and she was excellent because she was actually celiac herself and so were her children. So she understood what it meant because I think the most overwhelming thing is like people think, oh, you know, we just don't eat bread. But obviously it's more than that, you know, it's also rye and barley and soy and malt and that. I mean, now it's not so bad. because I know, and I go in and I know the products I can definitely have. Like, I remember the first time I went shopping, it just took me about 3 hours because I had to read every single label that I picked up. It was just, yeah, it was just the diet, and it took up to about 2 years to see the change, putting on weight a little bit, and then finally starting to see regrowth in my hair. And during that time, I just found your company. My pigmentation had gone, like, from the micro scalping.
Yeah, it fades over time, doesn't it? That micropigmentation, sort of tattooing it, does fade.
Yeah, it does fade.
So it was starting to fade just in time for your hair to start to grow back.
Yes, and like, it is back, but not as it was. Mm-hmm. And I have to accept that, and I'm okay with that. So it's still thin on the temples, and my parting is a little bit wider than what it used to be. Luckily, the bit at the back grew back, so at least like I can have my hair down and feel okay. But using your fibers and your shampoos and conditioners is what is just brilliant. Yeah, it's just helped me no end. And I actually sent some fibres through your UK website over to my best friend in the UK because she started having issues as well, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. And so once your hair started to grow back, how long between the – so you said 2 years, you could see it starting to grow back. Between there and then when you felt like, you know, you could look in the mirror and go, oh, you know, it's back.
Probably a year, actually.
Yeah, right.
So once it started growing, yeah, it was sort of a year. And then people started, bless them, they started saying, oh, your hair's looking good, or it's looking thicker, which, you know, is obviously better than before if they had said it the other way. But, yeah, it was just the fact then. And my hairdresser, I continue to see her during that time, doesn't mean much, but I'd move north of the river here. My hairdresser's south of the river, and I travel 50 minutes to go and see her because she has been through this whole journey with me, and she understands what I went through, and she's sort of helped me, like the way my hair's cut to look a bit fuller, and it's not coloured closer to my head because I don't think, because she sort of says your hair is quite delicate, you know, and I don't want to put any more stress on it. So we just colour it a little bit lower down and things like that. But, yeah, it finally got there.
Well, and I think it's really good for everyone to know that from when you first found out what your underlying cause was, being celiac, there would have been a period of time from there to changing your diet, to your body starting to recover, to perhaps your iron levels and whatever else had been low to start to turn around, and for your body to then heal to get to the point where it could then start to grow hair. So you were saying it was about 2 years from the diagnosis of celiac disease to the point where you felt that it was starting to come back. So that was 2 years, and then probably another year before you felt like your hair was back. And I think what's really important about that is for women to know out there who may try something for a couple of months and say, oh, well, that didn't work, that the reality is this does take a long time to turn around. And, you know, there you are, it's sort of taken you 3 years all up from, you know, the beginning of your fixing it journey, your recovery journey, to when you had enough hair that you felt people were commenting and you felt better about it. So how do you feel about your hair these days? So it's now a couple of years later?
A lot more confident. I obviously still need the products, and that's fine, but I feel comfortable in being able to use the products, as you know, like the hair fibres, I mean, more than anything. And I've got used to using them. And like my partner sort of says to me, oh, you know, it looks fine, don't worry. But I suppose it could sound like I'm coming from a space of vanity, but it was just more the fact, I think, I was so paranoid before when I lost it. And I think when you have gone through that hair loss and that panic and worry of, like, you know, is it all going to fall out, that I just want it to look fuller. And so I don't have to use as many hair fibres as I did, and I'm glad it's grown back a bit more around the temples because that was a bit more difficult place to try and cover it.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, it's good.
And so while you were going through the hair loss part of it, how was the support from your partner?
Really good. Mm. He was worried. I mean, he used to say, "Oh, you know, like you're too thin," and blah blah blah, and thought there was something wrong. And you know, I sort of said, like about my hair, and he's like, "Don't worry." And I don't actually know if men get it. I mean, he is going slightly bald himself, and so I suppose he just thinks, "Oh, it's, you know, it's just hair." And I remember a girl at work saying that to me. So I was talking to her when I was going through all the stressful time. And she sat there, bless her, she was like 20 years younger than me. And she is from Italian descent. And she had this beautiful, thick, black hair, so full. She was really pretty. And she's kind of, "Don't worry, you know, it's just hair." I remember thinking, "Oh, well, it's all right for you, you know," sort of like. She has so much of it. But my partner, he was supportive. I don't think it bothered him very much. It was more me, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because we hear a lot about women and the feelings that they have and how the people around them affect how they feel, which is understandable. So it's lovely to have a partner who was supportive and didn't really see any problem with it or wasn't in any way commenting or making you feel any worse than you already felt. So that's lovely to have a lovely, supportive partner, as do I. So yes, we're lucky to have that. Is there anything that you'd like others to know, anything that you could pass on?
I'd say don't lose hope. It's easy to say, like now, to say don't worry, because I know at the time how it feels, you just do. But I'd say explore the avenues of why you're losing your hair. I mean, like, we know a lot of women can lose their hair if it's like genetic. Menopause does take its toll. Having children takes its toll. Often women that have lost hair through childbirth, their hair grows back pretty good. But menopause, I think, was a hard one. But yeah, then, and if all of those areas are covered and there's still something else, then get some tests done, go to your doctor, because there could be, you know, something else. Don't shut yourself away either, because it's easy to want to do that because you lose confidence, you don't want to go out. And say if you, I don't know, you go to an event, you feel like everyone sort of looking at you, or while they're talking to you, they're looking at your hair, but they probably don't notice it as much as you think they do. Mm. And again, that's easier said than done, you know, but just hang in there. And if, you know, go to your doctors if you're really worried about anything else.
Yeah, thank you. Well, actually, I think those are two very important pieces. One, don't lose hope. And two, see a doctor and get a blood test. At least start there and see if there's anything going on under any underlying causes that can be resolved. I mean, just low iron in itself can be picked up in a blood test. So, you know, there's lots of things that can be picked up in a simple blood test, which is pretty easy and fast. The results are quick as well. So good advice there, Dee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time today. I really appreciate your being so candid and opening up for us and for all those women out there who are feeling like you and I have felt on days in the past. It's just so nice to have listened to somebody talking through their story. So thank you very much, Dee. We really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
A big thank you to Dee for sharing her story with us today. So now for our Did You Know segment, I want to talk to you about something very practical, hair washing. You probably look in the mirror like I do every day and wonder if you can go another day without washing your hair. Am I right? I think we all do that. There is a lot of misinformation out there around hair loss and hair washing. And I feel like I need to help with this particular topic and debunk some of the stories that are out there. So, firstly, washing your hair every day is actually really good for your hair. It's also really good for your scalp. So if you think about your scalp as part of your skin, and if you think about skincare, and particularly think about the skin on our face, we look after that skin on our face generally pretty well. We're keen to do what we can on, from an anti-aging perspective, and we need to think about our scalp in the same way. We need to keep our scalp clean, and therefore we're going to have to wash it. And also washing your hair stimulates your follicles, and if you've got a scalp massager, all the better. And if you don't have a scalp massager, massage your scalp while you're washing it. But I know what happens with women with hair loss, and that is that they find when washing their hair that a lot of hair comes out at that time. And it is scary. It's happened to me. It clogs the drain. It actually makes you feel a bit sick. So I really do understand that. But the thing is, hair in the resting phase will fall out, and it will fall out probably when you wash it. It's more likely to fall out when you wash it than any other time. So it's going to fall out anyway. So if you wait a week to wash your hair because you're scared of looking at how much hair falls out, then you'll have a week's worth of hair fall when you wash your hair. If you wash your hair every day, then you have a day's worth of hair loss. And actually, just in terms of how it makes you feel, a day's worth of hair loss is not as hard to look at as a week's worth. So that's one reason why I would suggest you wash your hair every day, as well as keeping your scalp clean. You know, there's a lot of buildup on our scalp from just daily grime from the air, and you need to wash that off the same as you do with your face. You wash it off, and you should wash it off your scalp as well. I mean, you need a healthy scalp to grow healthy hair. And actually, a couple of years ago, I noticed that although I had recovered from my various bouts of hair loss, I didn't have a lot of new regrowth, you know, that sort of little bits of hair sticking up. And I noticed that over a couple of weeks, I kept thinking, there's not a lot of hair growth happening here. So I thought, what I might do, I was washing my hair every second day at that time and probably had mostly during my hair loss months and years. And I thought, okay, I'm going to wash my hair every day for 6 months. I'm going to commit to it. It's a big job washing your hair every day for 6 months because there's a lot of styling and drying and things to do afterwards. But I thought if I use a really good quality hair shampoo, and I did use one that Boost and Blend makes, and there are others out there of similar quality, good quality shampoo, kind to hair. And I thought, okay, I'm going to use that every day for 6 months. And so I did. And during that time, I would lose maybe one or two hairs after washing my hair. So, you know, I'd comb my hair through with a wide tooth comb and a couple of hairs would fall out, which is normal. And then about 4 to 5 months in, I realized that, yay, I had some new hair. I had new growth and it was sort of sticking up like new growth does. And I tell you what, I was very happy to see that. And I thought, okay, well, that's an experiment on me and an experiment of one, but it was the right thing for me. It really stimulated my hair growth, really set me back up with some good hair thickness, which I'm still enjoying now. But I also want to say with shampoos and with shampooing your hair, you're not shampooing your hair to make it squeaky clean. You're just shampooing your hair to clean your scalp. And it's really important that you don't use harsh detergents, which really dry your hair out, especially if you're going to dry your hair every day. You need to be very careful that you use products that have nourishing ingredients in them. And on that topic then, expensive shampoos. That isn't always going to give you the best results. Quite a few years ago now, when I was really in the thick of my hair loss, I tried a shampoo that was costing $100 a bottle. I know that's too much and ridiculous. And you probably know where I've been, where we've tried anything. And I had to drive to the other side of Sydney to pick up this particular product. And I continued to do it thinking, oh, it's $100 a bottle. It must be great. But actually over time, I realized it wasn't making any difference. And then when I learned a bit more and I looked into the ingredients, oh my gosh, I realized they were terrible. So don't think that an expensive shampoo is a great shampoo. But I would also say neither's a really cheap one. I'm sorry, but some of the ingredients cost a lot of money and the super cheap ones probably aren't that great either. And there's a hell of a lot of money put into marketing of hair products, and it can be confusing. So my advice is to avoid nasty chemicals And there's quite a few of those, but the common ones to avoid are the parabens and the sulfates. There is an ingredient called DMDM hydantoin, and I would definitely avoid that. There are some very well-documented legal cases about that ingredient. MEA, DEA, petrochemicals, and also have a look at the order of the ingredients on your ingredient bottle, on your shampoo bottle. I hope it's not a really long, long, long list. And just do look at those ingredients. Put your glasses on, ladies, if you need it. Get in tight and have a look at those teeny weeny little ingredients. It's worth having a look. So look for natural ingredients like essential oils, rosemary oil, lavender oil, chamomile, jasmine. And actually, while we're on the subject of ingredients, can I please suggest that you don't use dry shampoo? Dry shampoos in the main are full of harsh ingredients, but not only that, if you're using dry shampoo to avoid washing your hair, then by its very nature, it's going to build up on your scalp. It's going to sit there much longer than those ingredients should be. So if you're trying to avoid washing your hair and you're using dry shampoo, then you really are doing double the harm. And then the final thing that I'd like to say about hair washing is be gentle. Particularly with wet hair. Wet hair can be quite elastic and it can break really easily. So the first thing I would suggest is get yourself a microfiber towel or a towel wrap. Wrap your hair in a towel as soon as you've washed your hair and just leave it there for about 5 minutes so it can soak up the majority of the water, and then you're not rubbing your hair and your scalp really harshly trying to dry it off. And then use a wide tooth comb. Don't use a brush on wet hair. Use a comb, use a wide tooth comb. So they're my tips for hair washing. Please try it. Try washing your hair every day, or if you're too scared to wash it every day, every second day. But increase the amount of hair washes you do in an average week, and I think you will find that you will have a better outcome. And your hair will look better as well. It always looks good when it's just being washed. And just a reminder, when I was washing my hair every day, that was after the various acute phases of my hair loss. So I just want to mention that I was only a sample of one. So I'm not saying that no matter what's causing your hair loss, if you wash your hair every day, it will grow back. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is washing your hair every day can help to stimulate growth by keeping your scalp clean. It also stimulates your follicles just with the simple act of washing and massaging daily. Or, as I said earlier, even every second day is at least better than once a week. So let me know how you go. If you give it a try, wash your hair more often, preferably daily, as I said. If you'd like to give that a go, maybe you could send me an email and tell me how you go. I read my personal emails every day, and I'll give you my personal email address, actually. It's bambi@boostandblend.com. And so if you'd like to share your story on the podcast, well, I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to have a chat with you and hear your hair loss story. And I think all the other ladies out there would love to hear your hair loss story too. So pop an email to me if you have a question that you'd like me to answer, or you'd just like to comment on how you're going with your hair, or if you'd like to share your story. All sorts of things you can do. Just send an email to me, a personal email, and I will read it. Can I also just say that I'd like to encourage you to remember this one thing which I like to mention. Kindness is beautiful, so wear it every day. Thanks for joining me on the Hair Loss in Women podcast. And a big thank you to the women who share their stories here and with others in their community. One of the hardest things about hair loss for women is that we don't talk about it. So if you do want to hear more, please subscribe to the podcast, and if you like what you heard, why not leave a review? Positive reviews will help other women to find this podcast too. You can also find out more in my book, Hair Loss in Women. This podcast has been recorded in Sydney, Australia, and is produced by Pod and Pen Productions.